Good morning, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to Intas 1Q 2022 earnings conference call. Today's speakers are João Vitor Menin, CEO, Alexandre Rissi, VP of Finance, Helena Caldeira, CFO, and Santiago Stelli, Strategy and IR Officer. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded, and the replay will be available at the company's IR website. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the prepared remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. For the Q&A session, we ask you to write down your question via the Q&A icon at the bottom of your screen. Your name will then be announced, and you will be able to ask your question live. At this point, a request to activate your microphone will appear on your screen. If you do not want to open your microphone live, please write down "no microphone" at the end of your question. In this case, our operator will read your question aloud. Please note that there is a translation button at the right side of your screen, where you can choose the language you want to hear. Now, I would like to welcome one of your speakers for today, Mr. João Vitor Menin, CEO. Sir, the floor is yours.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you all for joining our earnings call for 1Q 2022 results. Before I start, two highlights. First, I would like to welcome Santiago Stelli. Santiago just joined us as our Head of Strategy and IR. Santiago spent the last 10 years on Morgan Stanley covered investment bank. And funny that he was in charge of doing our IPO back in 2018. So he knows quite well about the business and about our culture, the Sangue Laranja culture. Also, we're celebrating 4 years since we IPO'd the business back in 2018. And as you might recall, very proud of doing our IPO and three other follow-on offerings since then. Talking about the 1Q, I would like to do a very sharp statement. We had a very good quarter. And the reason why I say that, first, we kept growing our business. We are a growth company. And second, we kept innovating. We are disruptive. We just launched, for example, our sixth vertical, the cross-border services. Also, we were able to navigate well despite the macro trends in Brazil and the volatility in the capital markets. I would like to say that instead of reacting, we prepared ourselves. And I would say that we prepared ourselves maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. We started building our business model back in 2015. And at the time, what we wanted to have was a retail banking business, which would help us to have a very good quality and cost of funding, and also a good breakdown between NII and fee income. These two things together would also deliver the best value proposition for our clients. And I would say that that's exactly what we achieved today. And that's why I say we are prepared for this tough scenario ahead. The outcome of that is that we keep growing the business. The platform is growing at a fast pace. We will hit 20 million clients by the end of this month. I'm very proud of that, and thank you all our clients that might be listening to this call. Also, as I mentioned, we will print a good balance, something around 55-45 breakdown between NII and fee income. This will help us to have a sustainable business despite of the macro trends, and also will help us to be an asset-light company despite being a bank. On the operational leverage, we're very excited as well. We see more RPAC, the revenue per active client, kicking in. The reason for that, we have five different credit verticals. We have six different fee income verticals. And as I mentioned, we're gaining more clients. So the RPAC will keep growing. Also, we improve our CTS, our cost to serve, which is a very, very good number when you compare to the incumbent banks. We believe that we'll keep diluting our general expenses. For instance, employees, which is a big chunk of it. We add 2,000 employees last year. We will not for sure add 2,000 employees on 2022. We launched a lot of products. We implemented a lot of things on our super app. So it's there. It's time to make our clients to use the service that we provide over there. Last but not least, the competition is slowing down. We see what's happening in the capital markets. So we believe that with less competition, our franchise will perform even better. I think that we will have an even lower CAC despite of having the best CAC in the market. We will have more growth despite growing quite well for these past years. And last, I would say that a lot of engagement, which will drive APAC ahead. With that said, I'll pass the mic to Alexandre that will go through the six verticals of our business.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being with us. As most of you know, we operate six business verticals, which complement and reinforce each other. Having added cross-border services as our sixth vertical after the acquisition of YouSend in a process that started last year. I'll go through the highlights of each vertical. Starting on day-to-day banking, we had stellar growth on cards, with volumes increasing by 86% year-on-year. In this quarter, 5.8 million Brazilians used our cards. Transactional banking, which is this first day-to-day banking vertical, has consistently been a very strong vertical for Inter in market share, shown through demand deposits share and Pix market share, for instance. Moving to credit, our expanded loan portfolio approached the 20 billion reais mark, of which 4.5 billion were originated during the first quarter, 22% more origination than on the same period of last year. Our NIMs have been moving north of 7%, reflecting the efforts that we're making on repricing of the portfolio. Talking about insurance, our Interseguros vertical, we had outstanding results in the quarter with revenues growing over 50% year on year. Our client base achieved 915,000, close to our aspirational goal of 1 million that we established back in 2019. Product diversification, contextualized sales, and focus on user experience continue to pay off as we go. On investments, revenues reached 37 million reais in the quarter, an impressive 144% increase year on year. 2 million clients are operating the platform as of the first quarter of 2022. Moving to page 11, I will dive a little deeper on Intershop, our marketplace vertical. Our revenues grew 135% as compared to a year ago, reaching 101 million reais in the quarter. As you can see, GMV grew 56%, and we were able to considerably expand our take rates. On a gross basis, take rates expanded to 9.6%. On a net of cashback basis, it nearly tripled from 1.1% to 3%. We're able to navigate through a typically weak quarter for retail with very impressive KPIs. Finally, I'll talk a little bit about our newest vertical, which is cross-border services. This line of business results from the acquisition of YouSend, which closed in January of this year. The core of the business for now is the remittances from Brazilians living in the US that we currently transfer money back to Brazil. And going forward, we'll have a fully integrated platform that will tap on the technology stack that we have in Brazil. Our cross-border services vertical already has significant volumes being transacted, with more than $200 million in remittance TPV during the first quarter, more than 54,000 global accounts opened, and peaks of around 3,000 new global accounts a day. We're excited with the growth of this vertical and with the optionalities that it brings to our business. With that, I'll pass the word to Santiago, who will talk about our financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandre. Good morning, everyone. Now, moving on to page 14, this image illustrates how we think about the long-term value creation at Inter. By being, on the one hand, the largest purely digital regulated bank in Brazil, and on the other hand, by having a highly recognized and established brand, these two factors combined have allowed us to attract clients at a very low CAC, consistently below 30 reais per client. The result has been a viral growth in our customer base that has given us a monetization potential in two fronts. First, on the interest income, which is spread across multiple products, and second, on fees, which is asset light and recurrent and expands beyond just financial services. The monetization impact combined with a decreasing cost to serve will allow us to deliver strong shareholder value as our operational leverage continues to materialize. Moving on to page 15, our expanded loan portfolio reached in the quarter 19.8 billion reais. This represents an expansion of 81% year over year. On a quarter by quarter basis, our growth has intentionally been more modest as we have tightened our underwriting models, particularly on credit cards, prioritizing existing clients over new ones. We expect growth to reaccelerate in the remainder of the year, particularly on the second half. It is worth noting that consistently through time, our loan mix continues to diversify across multiple products, decreasing the concentration risk of our exposures. On asset quality, we see that it remains strong as a result of the structure of our balance sheet. Starting from the left, you can see that from our expanded loan portfolio, 73% is collateralized. And over the interest-bearing portfolio, the collateralization level reaches 94%. Our coverage ratio remains stable through the quarters, now standing at 93%. When we look at the coverage ratio on a product-by-product basis, credit cards and SMEs are well above 100% coverage. Lastly, on the right-hand side, our NPLs is 3.3% of the total loan portfolio in the quarter. On a product-by-product basis, NPLs have increased marginally, with the exception of SMEs, which decreased during the quarter. Going on to funding on page 17, our funding base reached 23.2 billion reais in the quarter, an increase of 54% year over year. Given the rate environment, combined with seasonality of first quarter, we've seen client interest naturally more focused on higher yielding products, such as time deposits or LCIs. Despite this dynamic, our market share of demand deposits increased during the quarter and remains a key competitive advantage for us at Inter, particularly on an environment of increasing rates. Our cost of funding as percentage of Selic reached 53% and remains one of the lowest in the industry. Going to page 18 on revenues, there are three key points that we'd like to highlight. The first point is growth. As we delivered an impressive 129% growth year over year, reaching 1.2 billion reais in the quarter, an absolute record for us, and a value comparable to what we produced in the entire year in 2019 or 2020. The second point to highlight is the diversification of our revenue base. This diversification is noticeable when breaking revenues in terms of fees versus gross interest income. You can see fees this quarter surpassing the 40% mark, which is something we pride of, given the capital light and recurrent nature of the fee business. On a net interest basis, the share of fees grew even more, now standing at 58% of total revenues. The diversification is even more pronounced when zooming into the components of interest and fees, which you can see in the pie charts on the right-hand side of the page. The third and final point to highlight on revenues are marketplace revenues. These are non-financial revenue stream that started only 2 years ago and is still in the early innings of its development. These revenues in the quarter reached 100 million reais, representing 19% of our fee revenue or 8% of our total firm revenue. Moving on to page 19, on unit economics, we're doing an in-depth work to show the analysis on a cohort by cohort basis, which will be ready for public review in the next earnings call. On the left-hand side of the page, you can see our CAC remained consistently below 30 reais. And on the center, you can see our ARPAC that continues to expand, now reaching 367 reais on an annualized basis. Worth noting that here we're still showing ARPAC deducting interest expense. And finally, on the right-hand side, you can see our cost to serve, which has remained at around 110 reais per client. It is worth noting that this CTS is fully loaded. We expect the decrease in CTS to be more pronounced going forward. As João Vitor mentioned at the beginning of the call, we doubled our employees from 2 to 4,000 last year, and this year we expect the increase to be single-digit percentage. Going on to page 20 on gross profit, we can see a clear acceleration through time, with the first quarter of each year being lower given seasonality. The exception in seasonality was the first quarter of 2021, given the strong government support as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. For 2022, we see the same logic of prior years, and the remaining 9 months of the year reaccelerating the trajectory. On page 21, we can see that given the fragmentation in our loan portfolio and the strength of our deposit base, our NIM has performed well with a small yet steady increase across quarters. As we continue repricing our loan mix, particularly in payroll and real estate, which take longer to reprice than SME or credit cards, our NIM will continue to expand as we are structurally long on Selic. On page 2022, to conclude, on net income, we deliver another positive result, now with 27 million reais in gain. We think that the operational leverage impacting bottom line profitability will be increasingly visible in the second half of this year. With that said, I'll pass it to Elena, who will comment on the corporate reorganization. Thank you.
Thank you, Santiago, and good morning, and thank you all for joining our earnings call. I want to make a small recap on our corporate reorganization. Last week, on May 12th, we had the approval of the transaction in our shareholders meeting. We had an impressive support from our shareholders, with over 75% of the float present on the shareholders meeting and 85% of approval rate. With the reorg approved, we will be listed on NASDAQ under the symbol INTR, and we will have BDRs listed on B3 with the ticker BIDD31. I will share some of the key dates for the completion of the transaction. We have a cash out period in which eligible shareholders can elect to cash out their stocks at the price of 19.35 per unit. The cash out option will be kept at 10% of the free float shares, which is approximately 1.1 billion reais. If exceeded, we'll have a proration of the shares, and shareholders will receive both the cash out for part of their shares and BDRs for the remaining shares. The cash out period will start, started on May 13th and goes to May 20th. On June 17th, we have the last trading day of BD shares. So BIDI 3, 4, and 11 will stop trading on the 17th. And we'll have on the following trading day, on the 20th, the start of the BDRs on B3. After 2 days, when shareholders have these BDRs under their custody, they will have the option to break these BDRs into Class A shares. And on the 23rd, we have the initial listing of INTR shares on NASDAQ. I remind you that all BDRs can be broken into Class A shares anytime after that. So with that, I will pass the word back to João so that we can go later into Q&A.
Thank you, Elena. So some closing remarks, but before that, just something I forgot to mention on my initial speech. We're very proud to be the best super app on the West world. This is very important, specific at this moment. So some remarks. We continue to gain market share. That's very important. We have a highly diversified revenue mix, also very important. Our loan portfolio is very highly collateralized. As I mentioned, we start building that many, many years ago. Our fund base is the best in class, again, because of our retail unit banking business. We have a full bank license, not the payment account license, a full bank license, which is very important for us. We're highly capitalized and liquid. We're going to continue expanding our margins as we scale. The employees are there. The business itself are there. The verticals are there. The super app are there. The clients are there. So we're done. We're just going to gain this market share and this ARPAC soon. And last, as Elena mentioned, about our corporate reorg, I really would like to thank our shareholders for supporting us. Since we IPO'd back in 2018, I'm very happy that despite of the ups and downs on the economy, the ups and downs on the market, we always had a great support from our shareholders. And this is very important for our business. So thank you very much. Now let's jump into Q&A session.
We will now begin the question and answer session. Once again, for this Q&A session, we ask you to write down your question via the Q&A icon at the bottom of your screen. Your name will then be announced, and you will be able to ask your question live. At this point, a request to activate your microphone will appear on your screen. If you prefer not to open your microphone live, please write down "no microphone" at the end of your question, and our operator will read your question aloud. The first question comes from Thiago Batista, sell-side analyst from UBS BB. Thiago, we are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi guys, thanks for the opportunity. I have one question about the Intershop. We saw a big increase in the net take rate during the first Q, if I'm not wrong, to 3% from 1.2 or something close to that. Can you comment if this is a new level of net take rate or if you can see a further expansion of this net take rate? And my second question is about the asset quality. We saw a sharp increase in the NPL ratio during the quarter. What we can expect going forward in terms of NPL ratio for Inter?
Thiago, João Vitor speaking. Thank you for your question. I'm going to cover the Intershop and later on, Alexandre will cover the NPL ratio. So on Intershop, it's interesting because we held some meetings with some investors last week, and I was telling them that when we began the Intershop, which is only 2 years from now on, we were almost begging for the retailers to be on our platform. And we were almost begging for the clients to try the platform and to buy things online. Now things are different. We see the retailers looking for ourselves to connect their products in our super app. We have a very good capability here of delivering them conversion on sales to skip the MDR cost for them. So it's a very powerful combination. And therefore, we can charge more on the take rate side. Also, on the cashback, we see many clients, recurrent clients, using our platform, and therefore we don't need to pay them as much cashback as we have been paid. The combination of these two trends, it equals to a better net take rate, which I believe that this is the trend going forward. Of course, we might have ups and downs, it's normal, but the trend is positive. We think that we can, with time, to aim on a 4% take rate, net take rate for the shopping. That's what we're working to achieve. We're very excited with this initiative. We see the retailers look for us more and more, and we see the clients getting used to buy things on Intershop. So this is the outcome and what we foresee for our net take rate going forward. A positive trend, improving quarter over quarter. That's how excited we are with Intershop. Alexandre, I'm gonna cover the NPL question.
Thank you, João. Thank you, Thiago, for the question. Thinking about NPLs and delinquency, first, I'd like to say that credit quality came along with our expectations. So with the macro deterioration that we have seen in the overall, it was widely expected that we and the market would see increase in delinquency. In our case, specifically for credit cards, that is our non-collateralized type of credit. And it came this way. So we did see this increase on an adjusted basis from 6.5 to 6.6. So it's a relatively low increase given the actions that we have taken mainly last year in October and November. We think our position to face the scenario is very positive. So we consistently drive the strategy of having the collateralized portfolios. Close to 75% of our total exposure today is collateralized. And having said that, going forward, we should deteriorate less than the consumer banks, as we have seen this quarter as well. Coverage ratios are healthy. And so having said all this, we're ready to navigate through the next quarters in terms of where NPLs could go. I would prefer to wait and see, Thiago, because we have seen in the past, mainly in 2020, that different government incentives, for instance, have prevented NPLs from going up. In the first quarter of 2020, a lot of the banks made things like very large additional provisions, thinking that things would go bad, and things did not go bad. Actually, they went well, and NPLs behaved super well after that. That's why we are working a lot to prevent NPLs from going up, doing our homework in all the credit lines, and we wait and see what happens in the upcoming months and quarters. Thank you.
Thank you, João. Thank you, Alexandre.
Okay, thanks for your question. And the next question comes from Yuri Fernandes, sell-side analyst from JP Morgan. Yuri, we are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, João, Elena, Alexandre, everybody. I have a first one on capital. We saw some decrease on your core Equity Tier 1 this quarter, about 900 bips. We saw some increase in intangibles. So just checking if this is related to Usend. If you can comment a little bit on your capital position. That's the first. And I have a second one regarding operating leverage and profitability. My question is if you are close to the inflection point here, because we are seeing, you know, you repricing loans. I guess you are now repricing some credit card products. Headcount is stabilizing, other administrative expenses are growing at a more controlled pace quarter over quarter. So my question is, what you expect for profitability in the second half? Like if you can provide any kind of guidance for us here for 2022 or 2023, that would be helpful. But I just wanted to understand a little bit more about this operating leverage. Where are we at that? And where should we start to see, you know, better results here? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Yuri. Santiago here. I'll take the capital part of the question. So yes, our CET1 decreased by 9 percentage points. 4 of those 9 were related to credit growth, and 5 points were from Usend. We assumed the goodwill from the transaction, the full impact of the goodwill upfront, even though there is a deferred payment through earnouts. We decided to take an aggressive stance there and absorb it all at once. We don't expect more impact from USEN, given that this product offering will be transactional, with no credit involved going forward. And then on the capital base remaining, 35% of CET1, we think this is a good cushion that we have, with several times above the average of the market, to continue growing for several years. I'll pass on to Elena on the profitability point.
So yes, hi Yuri. Well, regarding operational leverage and profitability, we see that this is the trend going forward. We understand that we are in the tipping point in which we have presented a lot of growth over the past years, and we have a lot of room to show operational leverage going forward, both on the revenue side and on the expense side. On the revenue side, we will continue to see RPAC increasing as the customer base matures. We see that older cohorts of clients have a higher average revenue per user, which we will become more will become higher on average. As we see more, as we add less customers compared to the total customer base. What we also have on the revenue side is the increase of market share and scale in the products that we have, right? Over the past years, we have been launching many new products and initiated many new verticals, and such as Internshop, for instance, that we asked a question on in the previous question, but what we see is that the maturity of the products also help to drive revenues up. When it comes to the expenses, there is operational leverage coming from basically everywhere. If we think about like personal expenses, for instance, last year we grew a lot. We basically doubled the employee base, and this year will be a marginal growth, since we have already built the infrastructure to keep growing forward. We don't have an actual guidance like to give to the market right now for the second half of the year or for next year. But what we can say is that operational leverage will start getting more significant going forward. And this is what we expect.
And if I may complement, two points on this. On the RPAC, if you convert it to monthly and dollarize it, it's $6 per month per active client, net of interest expense. The cohort analysis shows us this more than doubles through time. And half of our clientele enter the platform in the past 12 to 15 months. So the natural evolution of that clientele becoming more profitable alone will have an impact on revenues. And the second point is the acceleration of our product adoption. Before, it took us 10 quarters to reach 3.5 products per client, and now it's taking us 2 quarters. So this is an acceleration on the RPAC expansion in the new cohorts.
No, thank you, Elena and Santiago. Santiago, just a follow-up briefly here on capital. An investor asking me here about cash out. It's a debt, right? So no capital impact from right?
So yes, Yuri, I'll complement. I'll get on those. So we have for the payment of the cash out, we have hired a debt with some Brazilian financial institutions. One of the options is to do a capital reduction to pay for that, but that is not the only or not the main option that we have. So the idea is to avoid this capital reduction, not having a capital, like an impact on capital, given the cash out.
Super clear, Elena. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. And now the next question comes from Chito Labarta. Chito, we are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. Also, a couple of questions. One, if you can give some guidance in terms of, you know, what you expect for loan growth, particularly in the different segments. You know, you've highlighted you have a relatively collateralized loan portfolio. Are those the segments that you think will grow faster? How do you think about the uncollateralized outlook in terms of growth, particularly with the asset quality deterioration? And then second question, you're following up a bit more on the profitability question that UD asked. Santiago, you mentioned if you dollarize and convert to monthlies around $6, any color, where is some of your more mature clients in terms of that RPAC or what, you know, what they're generating today on the more mature client base? And also any guidance or target for where your return on equity can eventually get to, you know, once you're kind of on a sustainable level of profitability and how long do you think it could take to get there? I know it could be some time away, but just to get how you think about that return on equity on a longer term basis. Thank you.
So Tito, João Vitor speaking. Thank you for the question. I'm going to start from the last one about the ROE. As Elena mentioned, we're not giving a guidance to ROE. And actually it's hard for us to predict that the ROE is going to be X points within three quarter, first quarter, whatever. But what I like to reinforce is that by having a good balance between NII and fee income, that's the first thing to improve ROEs. So going forward with the revenues improving on both sides, we don't need to have a big equity to sustain our revenue pace of growth. So this is very important. Also, as Santiago mentioned, we see dilution on cost to serve, mainly because of the dilution of the personal expenses, and mainly because I would say that all of the products that we are offering and that we want to offer to the clients, they're there. We already put 1,200 plus IT guys to develop and to implement and to deploy, as I mentioned, the best super app on the West world. It's there. The clients are kicking in. They're coming. Very, very good CAC. So it's a matter of time for the profitability to improve. So this is one thing about ROEs. Your first question regarding the growth on the credit portfolio. As Santiago showed in the slides of the credit portfolio, we have, if you think about the expanded credit portfolio, 65 of it are collateralized. And if you think about without putting the transaction of the credit card, we have up to 95% collateralized. This was always a mindset for ourselves, for myself, I would say, for our board of directors, to have a credit portfolio very well balanced. We don't want to be a monoliner, a dual liner. We will not be a monoliner and dual liner. We want to have 5, 6, whatever, different verticals. And with that said, we do have a very small penetration amongst these products, mostly on the collateralized one, payroll and mortgage. So we foresee that we'll keep growing around 50% for 2022. We should slow down from what we did 2021 for obvious reasons, but we have room to keep growing on a 50% basis. Maybe next year we can do even more than that. We have CT1, we have equity to support, we have good funding, we have all the products, and most of the products are collateralized. So we're comfortable by growing our credit portfolio, the underwriting on a 50% base this year, and maybe more than that for 2023, depending on the macro outcome. So that's about the growth on the credit portfolio. And Santiago is going to cover, I think that your second question was about the RPAC.
Tito, good morning. Thank you for the question. So on RPAC expansion, a few topics. One, the $6 per month, that's on a net basis. I like to reiterate that, deducting interest expense. What we see in the mature cohort is that more than doubles, 2 to 2.5. We'll add more color, as I mentioned in my initial remarks, for the next earnings call on the cohort analysis. But the expansion of that RPAC has to do with us gaining market share and products. And for that, we added on page 7 to facilitate the analysis, the evolution of our market share and core products. And we see that we have already been gaining significant traction on several products. And now it's a matter of continuing that trend, sustaining a decent asset quality, which we intend to say as to do, as Jorito mentions, our mix diversified makes our loan portfolio be defensive or a lower beta in a context of increasing NPL. And with that, our ARPAC should continue to trend higher as we add percentage-wise less clients than the ones we've added on the past.
Great. Thank you, Joel, Victor, and Santiago. That's helpful. Maybe just one follow-up on the loan growth. You mentioned around 50%, and I assume that's more on the collateral. How about on sort of like on the unsecured? Just curious how you think about growing that portfolio, and should that grow less than that 50%? Any color on that?
So Tito, João Vitor speaking again. Yes, look, for the previous year, we expanded more on the unsecured, on the credit cards. So we gained more market share on credit cards. From now on, actually from the end of 2021, we decelerated the growth for the credit card portfolio, mostly on at the time of the concession, at the time of the on board of the client. So we're trying to cherry pick more clients for credit card underwriting, clients that are with us for a longer period of time. That's what we've been doing for the credit cards. Having said that, we believe that credit cards are gonna go accordingly to the other types of credits, mortgage, payroll, SMEs, and the agribusiness. And therefore, we think that the breakdown, I would say by the end of the year or maybe first Q 2022 is gonna look pretty much the same as we have today, the fragmentation of the credit portfolio. So we don't see any of these five different verticals gaining more market share in a fast pace going forward. I believe that all of them are gonna grow pretty much at the same, and we're gonna, and we want to keep this good balance between the five of them, okay? So that's the outlook, the outcome for the next, I would say 2, 3, 4 quarters. Or even more, maybe 1, 2 years ahead, we're gonna see the pretty much the same breakdown between the credit portfolio.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, João Victor.
Tito, thanks for your question. And now the next one comes from Neha Agarwala, sell-side analyst from HSBC. Neha, we are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for the opportunity for asking a question, and congratulations on the results. I wanted to talk a bit more about credit cards. There has been a slowdown in terms of loan growth for credit cards and SMEs both during this quarter. So how do you see that loan growth going forward? And could you please clarify the 50% loan growth that you mentioned, that's for the book as a whole for this year, or is that for just the secured lending segments? And in terms of credit cards, even in terms of the number of credit cards used during the quarter and the TPV, even that was a quite weak sequentially, despite the seasonality. And that also had an impact on the fee income that led to modest fee income growth in my view. So could you shed some light on that as to what is your strategy in that regard and what should we expect in the coming quarters? And then I'll ask my next question.
So thank you for the question. So on cards, as I mentioned, when I was going through the growth by product, we intentionally decelerated the growth, and now the growth of cards during the quarter was in line with the average of our entire loan growth. And that was intentional to recalibrate and strengthen and underwriting models this quarter in the context of increasing delinquency. We are giving credit to new clients, but in a much smaller percentage than we were giving before, and we're prioritizing credit on cards on the existing clients. That naturally had an impact on fees. But to the point on the growth and related to Tito's questions before, we expect, unlike last year where the growth on cards was significantly higher than the average loan growth we had, a much more balanced growth among different products for this quarter, trying to maintain asset quality within acceptable levels for us. So the whole strength that we see in our loan portfolio, as Joe mentioned, is the diversification and the resiliency. And for that to continue playing out, particularly in a scenario of increasing delinquencies as we have this year, we don't intend to grow the loan portfolio at a faster pace than the average of our loan. We do want to gain market share, So we'll grow at a higher rate than the average of the market across products, but that growth will be more balanced across each of the products.
And the 50% loan growth is for the entire loan book?
Yes, it's for the entire loan book. Uh-huh.
Now, on the provisions, there was a big jump in the cost of risk during this quarter. And like you mentioned, there was no material deterioration in asset quality that we've seen. So any reason why there was a slight pickup in defaults and why the provisioning accelerated during this quarter? And is this the level, like around 5% cost of risk? Is that what we should expect for the year?
Hi, thank you, Nia. So we saw a growth given by the evolution on the NPL that we saw, and we reached this 5%. We should navigate through the same level throughout the year. So shouldn't see additional growth as we move forward.
Okay. And my last question is on the international business. Previously, you gave a bit aggressive guidance in terms of what your expectations is in terms of contribution of international businesses. Could you shed some light on what is your expectation now? How are you seeing your services develop outside Brazil?
Yes, so in the international business, the Ucent transaction closed this January, and from January onwards, it's part of the Inter ecosystem. The core of the business is remittances of Brazilians that live in the US and send money from the US into Brazil. This is a high revenue product with a high recurrency. On average, these individuals send funds to Brazil twice per month. We want to build an entire ecosystem of transactional products into the US, which is something we can do with a very low marginal additional cost, which would be absorbed by the US entity. We intend to migrate our app into the US and have a single app. Now there is a Usend app and an Inter app. We'll have a single app in the coming weeks, which will make it seamless for people to operate as they go from one country to the other. The revenue, just to have a sense, in 2021 of Usen was close to $50 million. This is a revenue stream that grows at close to 100% year over year. So on a compounding basis, it will become significant, but yet it's starting off a lower base. We don't intend to give credit in the short and medium term. It's a transactional value proposition that we want to have, and that will be fully integrated into the Inter ecosystem.
Okay, perfect. That's very clear. Any targets that you have in mind for your international operations? We'll see as it goes.
Nia, João Vitor speaking. Now, we don't see any targets. No, we don't see the need of M&A over there. As I mentioned before, the USAND initiative is important because we have all the license to run the business, the day-to-day business in 45 plus states in US. We are going to replicate most of the products that we have in Brazil, the transactional products on that app as well, on the single app. So, I mean, we don't need to do M&A in order to provide a good value proposition for the immigrants living in US. So that's not on the table right now.
Thank you so much, Joel and team.
Thanks for your questions, Neha. And now the next question comes from Otavio Tanganelli, sell-side analyst from Bradesco BBI. Otavio, we are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. Just a real quick one on my end. There was a sizable reduction on the interest revenues, notably on the corporate segment. I wanted to get a little bit of color on that on a sequential basis. I saw in your spreadsheet that you reported something around 105 million reais in the fourth quarter, which declined to 86 million reais in the first quarter. I wanted to get the rationale behind that, especially because we're still in a scenario of rising interest rates. So that was something puzzling to me. Thank you.
Hi, Otavio. Thank you for the question. Alexandre speaking. So the SME portfolio for us has a lot of seasonality. So very short-term portfolio. And it typically has a fourth quarter that's very strong, given by all the activity that we see in the country in the last quarters. And it's really seasonal. So the good part of it is that it enables us to reprice the portfolio very, very fast. So as we're navigating this this environment of having Selic hikes on every coupon meeting, having this quick turnover of the portfolio allows us to reprice it, and we should have a recovery in the upcoming months. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandre.
Thanks for your question, Otavio. And now the next question comes from Thiago Batista, sell-side analyst from UBS BB. Thiago, we are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead, Thiago.
Yes. Hi, guys. I have one question about the agreement between Inter and MasterCard. If not wrong, you guys recently renewed this agreement. Can you elaborate a little bit on this agreement and how we should see the impact of this agreement on the P&L of Inter?
So, Thiago, hi, João Vitor here. First of all, I'm very proud to be a partner from MasterCard since 2015-16. They were the first one to, I would say, accept Intermedium at the time. We had a business plan to have 100,000 clients by 2020, and they accept us on their platform. We start being a MasterCard issuer. And since then, we have been growing as much more than ourselves, Inter and MasterCard expected, and therefore we have been doing every 24 months, 18 months, we have been renewing our agreement with them. We just did that on January, and you're going to see most of the impact, which is going to be, I would say, a good impact. It's a way better deal than the one we signed in, I think, 2019, something around that, 2020. It's going to be a way better deal for us. And you're going to see that on the savings. We're going to reduce the savings that we have with MasterCard. This is a better way for us to put the agreement running instead of just getting rewards from MasterCard, which will cost us tax, PIS and COFINS. So you'll see mostly through the reducing the cost to be an issue for MasterCard for our 20 million plus clients. That's how we're going to see. And again, very proud to partner with MasterCard since the beginning of our retail banking business.
Very clear. Thanks.
Thanks for your question, Thiago. And now the last question for our conference call comes from Flavio Yoshida, sell-side analyst from Bank of America. We are now opening the audio so that you can ask your question live. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to ask questions. So my question is regarding client adds. So client adds was consistently trending up last year until the fourth Q, when you guys added almost 3 million clients. In the first Q, it decreased to 2.3 million clients. And I was wondering, what should we expect for client ads going forward? Was there any seasonality in the fourth Q, or should be, you know, the 2 million client ads more recurring level?
So Flavio, João Vitor here. Actually, maybe there is some miscommunication here. We didn't have a worse quarter first Q than 4Q 2021. Probably is related to the USEN clients that we put as a total clients. But when you think of our pace of onboarding new clients in Brazil every single month, every single day, we had the best quarter ever. And not only that, we have the best quarter not in a good time for adding clients with the holidays, carnival, and everything. So I believe that, as I mentioned before, Vlad, we see the competition slowing down. It's not that frenzy as it used to be maybe 6-12 months ago, with a lot of disruptors trying to just bring more clients at any cost. We see things slowing down, so we're very confident that we'll keep growing our business. I would say we can see growth quarter over quarter. Of course, we're not going to grow on the same compound base because it's impossible, but you'll see growth quarter over quarter. But I would say a better quality of growth, lower CAC, maybe better clients and more engagement among these new clients. So that's the trend. We're very comfortable on the level and the kind of clients that we're bringing to the platform. So that's the outcome for the rest of the year for sure.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks for your question, Flavio. And this concludes our question and answer session. I would like to run the conference back over to Mr. João Vitor Menin for his closing remarks.
So thank you, everyone. Thank you, the audience, for being with us again. Thank you, my colleagues here, Alexandre, Santiago, Elena. Thank you for the 4,000 plus employees at Inter that are working hard every single day to put us ahead of the competition, as I mentioned, for us to being able to launch this amazing company, this the best super app on the West World. I'm very proud of that. I mean, being based in Belo and achieve that, it's something amazing. And we're very committed to the business, doing our best. And I believe that we will get there. We'll get on the profitability that sometimes our shareholders, they ask. We'll get on the growth. So very excited with the years to come. And again, the best is already to come. We built a big franchise, big platform. The clients are jumping in. We are very excited with what we have ahead for our business, for our company. Thank you very much, everyone, and see you within 3 months. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The conference has now concluded. The IR area is at your disposal to answer any additional questions. Thank you for attending today's presentation. Have a nice day.